You're listening to KAST. I'm Tom Friel. And with me this morning, David Carr. He is the brand new executive director of Sunset Empire Transportation District. Good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
Let's talk a little bit about your background. Before we went on the air, you talked about all the places you lived. But you did live in Astoria for a period of time.
Yeah, Tom, I went to high school here in Astoria, middle school, grade school, Captain Robert Gray Elementary, Astor Elementary, you know, the kindergarten cop school. Junior high, played football on the high school football team. You know, had that whole experience growing up here.
Yeah. And what brings you back? How'd you get involved with the transportation district?
Well, I've been in transit since 2013. I was running RTC in Reno, Nevada, a small agency. They have about 75 buses and 55 paratransit vehicles, and we deployed some of the earliest electric vehicles. So one of my specialties is working with advanced vehicle technology and electric vehicles. Mm. So after working there for almost 10 years, I went to Cap Metro in Austin, Texas, where we just completed a deployment of 104 battery electric vehicles, working on a project for hydrogen fuel cell vehicles. And I just completed a project there, a research project with the FTA on autonomous vehicles. So we had a 40-foot bus, which was fully autonomous, and we operated it in the yard. So,
no kidding.
Yeah, so I've been in transit. I get to do all these neat projects, and then there's an opportunity to come home. My mom's here. My brothers are here. I thought that, you know, I'm at the point where I'm looking for something a little different, and I thought I would come here and slow down and kind of settle into a smaller agency, but there's a lot going on. So
always has been. Sunset Empire Transit has always had some real challenges just keeping in operation.
Yeah, they didn't tell me that in the interview.
Yeah, of course not. There was a point at which they actually shut down for a period of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we are past that. But you know, there's stuff in the news today. Yeah. The state is working on their funding, and the transportation plan there is going to be needing some work. The federal government's in somewhat disarray, and those federal funds, there's a lawsuit going on. 20 other agencies are suing the federal government, and because they're withholding the funds. So, you know, there's a lot of things that we would like to do and a lot of things we could be doing, but our funding is being delayed. So it's through no fault of our own, there's going to be a lag between our incurring expenses and us getting reimbursed for these expenses. Because it's a little bit different in running a rural transit agency, is where you basically turn in all your information and they reimburse you for those expenses. So we're having to pay for this out of our general fund, and then we wait for the federal government or the state government, that money to be reimbursed to us. And so it's not a slow it's not a quick process. It's a slow process. And with FTA, they did a lot of layoffs in D.C. So their workforce is reduced significantly. And then you couple that with ODOT just laying off hundreds, if not 1,000 people. That really significantly impacts how this process works.
Do you know how the reimbursement process is impacted by the passage of the rescission bill yesterday?
I did not see that.
Oh, yeah. It went through the House and it flew through the Senate, and it's waiting for the president's signature.
So is that where they're pulling the money back?
Yeah, that's rescission.
I don't think that impacts these funds, because it's kind of a different situation. I think nobody really wants to impact transit. Transit serves a community of folks that are dependent on us for transportation. They get to the hospital, they get to college, they get to their jobs. These are folks that really need a way to get around. And, you know, not everyone can afford a car and all the insurance and the gas and all that. And so the transit becomes a lifeline, and it becomes a way to really support a demographic that either can't drive or can't afford to drive. And so we're helping these folks every day. And I don't think anyone wants to reduce that funding. I think it's just a process that's got bogged down in bureaucracy.
Yeah. Well, the DOGE cuts probably is what's impacted you most.
Yes. Significant impact. But it's not the only impact. You know, there's impact here locally, well, the state.
Well, describe some of that for me.
Well, it is a state. The state transportation bill is being...
Which didn't happen. They didn't pass it.
So they're doing that. But the impact on ODOT is regional transportation or rural transportation is operated by or managed by ODOT. You know, the bigger agencies, TriMet, you know, if you're a big agency, you get your money directly. So that's a different situation for them. But the smaller ones, we're managed as a group, and we have to wait for in line with all those other agencies to get our funds.
Well, I think most people are familiar with, you know, the buses running around here, but there are other services that the district offers as well for those in need. And maybe you talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, too. Paratransit is one of our biggest things. We go from curb-to-curb service. So we'll pick up folks in a wheelchair or with a disability, a vision impairment. We'll pick them up at their home and take them to their doctor's appointment, to get their groceries, to visit their family. And we do that on a they schedule that. So they call us up, we set the schedule, and we go with a smaller bus, and we go and pick these folks up. This is like, those folks can't ride the regular bus. They're not mobile enough. They have some impairment that they cannot get to a bus stop. So this way, this service is provided within a certain radius of the fixed route, and we'll go pick them up, take them to where they need to go, and then take them back home.
And that's funded by what?
The same funding.
Yeah. Is it all one pot, or are these separate?
They're separate things? Little pots. And so you're basically, you get your, I mean, it's complicated, but there's several federal pots, and there's a state pot. And those represent roughly a third. And then there's some smaller pieces like the timber tax and some other smaller things. It's the compilation of all these funds that give us enough to operate.
We're talking with David Carr. He is the new executive director of Sunset Empire Transportation District. You've been on the job, what, about a month?
Yeah, it's my third week.
Your third week?
Third week.
Are you good at budgeting?
I'm getting a lot better at it, yeah.
Yeah. Were you hands-on with that at your previous agencies?
Yeah, I worked mostly with federal grants and did a lot of research and advanced vehicle technology. But then I was the fleet and facilities manager for 9 years in RTC, and I managed the facilities budget and the fleet budget on a, you know, annual basis, and had day-to-day responsibility for managing and oversight of those activities.
So what are you thinking about at this point in terms of this particular agency and the needs here? Have you had an opportunity to kind of lay out in your head where you want to go?
Well, it's early in the process, but I would say that we have to look at some options. If the funding that we're waiting for comes through in the normal process, we'll continue at business as usual. If there's a significant delay, we have to look at what services we have to curtail. And what we would do is we would do some reductions proportionate to how long it's going to take to get the funding. And that's a guess. It's a moving target. So what we're going to do is we have like plan A, which is operate normally. Plan B, which is reducing some services and trying to introduce something like microtransit. Microtransit would replace a route, and we would replace it with a subscription or a on-call service. Mm-hmm. Similar to the paratransit service we offer now, we would have the same paratransit service, and if somebody else needed a ride where we were no longer providing service, they could call or use the app and get a ride. And we would take them either to where they're going or take them to connect them to the bus fixed route service. So there are some things we can do in the interim to kind of stretch our dollars, offer the same coverage, but reduce the amount of vehicles, reduce the amount of service we provide, because we really can't cover everything if our funds are going to be reduced. And then there's kind of like other phases where we phase out other services as we go. We would preserve paratransit as much as we can. We would have potentially just a couple of routes left, and then everything else would be served with a microtransit concept. This is all in a very preliminary stage, so I don't have any concrete plans. We were talking about this as of yesterday, and again, it is my third week, so we'll be talking with the board in our next board meeting about all the different options we have, and then we'll develop some really finite plans, share them with the board at the next meeting, the meeting after that, and make some decisions on where the cuts will be and how long, because we really want to just slow play this and get it to the point where we can operate at some level for as long as we can. We don't want to get to a point where we're operating 100% and then just shut down. We don't want to shut down. So we may operate at a lesser service, and then when the funds become available, then we can build back up again.
Who's on your management team there these days? I mean, how is that the workload divided?
Well, we have a finance manager. We have an operations manager. We have facilities folks. We have a paratransit manager. These folks have been here quite a while. They're very good at what they do. I think it's a challenge that we all face. You know, there's limited resources. It's hard to get drivers, so we're always a little short on drivers. Our equipment's really old and in need of refreshing, and we're working on that. It's just the challenge is, you know, a small agency, they have to wear a lot of hats, and they have to do a lot of things. And it's complicated, you know, the federal requirements, the state requirements for budget, finance, reporting, is complicated.
We've run into problems with that in the past, particularly when things were running short in one area and money would come out where it shouldn't have come out of. I mean, that's happened in the past. It's resulted in executive directors having a relatively short time running the agency. So, you know, just letting you know that since obviously they didn't tell you that there were problems like that in the past, but it's been an ongoing issue.
Well, I was aware of the problems. We've discussed those. So, I mean, so what happened in the past was a function of several things, you know, and my goal is to not dwell on the past. I understand what happened. I'm looking forward. We have sufficient revenue coming in that we should operate at our current service level fine. It's just that in the current situation, it's delayed. And because we don't have a lot of money, we don't have a big, giant reserve,
right.
We can only go so far. And then we have needs that, like if we have to purchase a vehicle or something, we don't necessarily have the funds to make that procurement, you know. And so we're kind of going almost month to month. And in an agency like this, in the service we provide, that's a really precarious position. And we're kind of always in that. And then those buckets of money we're talking about, we get money for paratransit, we get money for fixed route, we get money for this or for that. And yeah, we can't just put the money and just spend it anywhere we want to. We have to spend it on the project they're assigned for. But we have a really good plan. We have a solid group of people. I think we're managing it well. It's just, it's a timing thing. And so if we reduce service for some amount of time, it's just to get by us the time to wait till that revenue and the situation improves. The state may be able to make some improvements that really enhance our position. And if they can do that, that'll really be able to help us get through this and provide a better level of service. The federal government can't really speak to that. But, you know, I think we'll get to a new normal. I don't know what that looks like today, but I'm optimistic that we'll be able to get to a point where we'll be able to provide a level of service. And if we use this microtransit concept, we may be able to provide this service throughout this entire time and really be able to manage a large portion of it. Again, it's all about timing. It's all about our resources, and we're going to do the best we can to meet the needs of the community.
We have a service-intensive kind of economy here where you have people who work in hotels and motels, restaurants, you know, that sort of thing. You know, beyond the few extra employees that might work at downtown businesses and so on within the county. They depend so much on that bus service in order to operate. It was really a mess when it had to shut down for a period of time. So if you were going to be looking at routes that you would cut, what might that entail in Plan B?
Well, from Plan A, what we're doing now, we can dial it back incrementally. And what we wanted initially, what we'll do is we'll stop a service, the fixed route service, and we'll be able to put an on-call service available.
Gotcha.
So initially, I don't think you'll see that. But, you know, if there's a route where we take 10 or 15 people a day, we'll stop that service. But we can tell those 10 or 15 people, call us, go on the app, we'll come get you, right? And then we can connect them to the bus. So there's still going to be a way to do that. Now, that doesn't happen indefinitely, and we may not have the resources to carry everybody, but we're going to connect people to the main route, or we're going to take them to where they need to go within their service area.
So, are we charging enough for services?
Bus transit typically doesn't get enough money from their fare box to cover their service. I mean, in some large agencies, it's 5%. Smaller agencies get maybe 10 or 20%. We don't get that much for fare box. It's $1 to ride, $3 for all day riding, $30 to ride, get a permit for the month. So you can, if you spent $30, you can ride on our system everywhere for a month.
That doesn't seem like it's enough.
Well,
is that where part of the problem lies?
It really matches the demographic. I mean, you know, $30 to me or you isn't a lot, but if you're on a fixed income or you have limited resources, that's a fair amount. We would like to charge more. I mean, if you were to charge what it costs to ride a bus, it'd be a lot more. And that's not what the purpose. Transit isn't designed that way. It's designed to support folks that either are commuting, which is a different group, and that's a whole other story because we don't have that a lot here.
Right.
But the commuters are in one category. But then you have people that are transit dependent or transit reliant. And those folks need this to go to the store. They need to go for medical care. They need it to go to college. And those groups typically don't have a lot of excess money. And so this really meets that need and really acts as kind of a safety net. You know, without that, there's people that get stranded. There's people that just can't go to work. I mean, it really impacts the social economic fabric of the community if it's not there.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, but isn't that part of the problem that transit, this philosophy of providing this service at a low cost, it really seems to be hurting transit, not just here, but everywhere. Like, we're just not charging enough for that fare.
You know, the economics of this has been established a long time ago. Fares were always coins. You know, you put in some quarters, you put in 50 cents, a dollar, or $2. Even in the big city, it's $2 or $3. You know, it's just that's the way it's been kind of developed. The federal government subsidizes it at the rate where we're able to do that. And we're heavily dependent on those federal dollars to keep operating.
At the next... For the next, 3.5 years? Doesn't look like the federal government's going to be stepping up to do a lot of that anymore.
Well, the federal government is looking at lots of things, and my impression is they're not looking to impact transit. There's transportation is to bring, like I said, people that need to get to work.
Yeah.
It transports families. It transports children. There's a whole group of folks that need to get where they need to go.
But even on the state level, it was Republicans and a few Democrats that essentially could not agree on that transportation package. And I don't know that transit wasn't part of that. I think that they were looking at trying to make ODOT more efficient, right? I just think it's so up in the air. I don't believe even with a special session they're going to come to something that's going to work.
You know, I'm not familiar with Oregon politics, and I really...
You will be.
Yeah. So, but my impression is that nobody wants to hurt transit. You know, I think transit tends to be the, you know, the little stepchild, right? And you get kind of put off to the side a little bit.
Right.
And so the larger issues tend to overshadow it. And so while we're on the sidelines, you know, there's lots of small agencies in this state that, you know, this delay is in whatever political mechanism or whatever things that are happening, these delays in a normal political thing that happens. It's part of posturing and sending messages and just working that process. But our margins are so small, and it's not like we have a lot of money. We're living month to month, and so when that money is delayed by a month or two or three or four, we may cease operations because we just don't have that kind of cash flow, you know? And so I don't think it's an intent to impact that. I think it's just a consequence of the larger political scheme.
Well, let's talk about something more upbeat.
Yes.
There have been, over the years, various experiments with battery-powered buses and that sort of thing here. Initially, when they brought out a bus and tested it, it couldn't make the hills. Now, that was quite a few years ago, and I imagine that we've seen a little bit more improvement in those kind of buses since then. Is that a direction where the bus needs to go to get off of diesel and to go electric? Is that a direction you would want to attend?
So I've been a leader nationally in this field for a decade, and I've been a proponent of it. And I think there's a real opportunity to, have an impact on the environment, have an impact on particularly in an urban area. If you have a dense urban area, and let's say you have a transit center, and all these buses come together there, and they're all using diesel fumes, it's kind of an intense area. And that's typically near a freeway or a highway, so now you got more. And in the case, like I was in Reno, we were next to the freeway, actually under the freeway. We have a diesel maintenance station, and we're across from the airport. So the air quality was pretty bad. So if you look at electric vehicles, zero emissions, zero tailpipe emissions. You can operate them for a range of 150 to 200 miles. And they really were getting a pretty good job of building these things. But more recently, it has not been very successful. One of the leading companies that were building these buses went bankrupt.
Mm.
Some of the buses that are being built today, the build quality isn't as good. I think that the range is limited. So a lot of times you're going 200 or 300 miles a day, but an electric bus won't go that far. So now you need two of them, or you need extra drivers. And then they don't refuel quickly. It takes 4 to 6 hours to charge a bus. Yeah. A diesel bus takes a few minutes. Hydrogen bus takes a few minutes. I mean, all the other technology works differently, but an electric vehicle has inherently got some things. Now, the biggest problem with an electric vehicle today would be cost. So an electric vehicle costs you $1.5 million. And if you were buying buses, if we were buying buses, we could never afford it. So we have to buy used buses or we have to buy diesel buses only because of the economics. We can never afford to buy a $2 million bus or $1.5 million bus.
Well, it'd be kind of silly anyway, wouldn't it? I mean, you'd never, not really necessary. We don't have enough buses to be creating a pollution problem, I don't believe.
Well, I think pollution is a composite of all the vehicles on the road. So if we could operate cleaner vehicles, that would be to our benefit. Whether it's in this one particular area or across the nation, I think that it's a positive thing to reduce emissions. I think there's ways to do it with compressed natural gas. I think you can use diesel buses with hybrid, so it has a diesel and a battery pack. Huh. So there is technology that exists to do it, but this technology is expensive. You know, I think that you have to go into it understanding it's not a one-to-one ratio for buses. You need more buses. And the costs are significantly higher. There's a learning curve for it. So there's a lot of challenges to it. And it's really the current state of the market's just in flux. You know, I'm hoping that the next generation of buses come out will be better. The current generation of buses just are not quite ready for prime time.
This may be a silly question. Don't feel bad about telling me if it is. But do we actually own the buses that we have?
Oh, yeah.
We do.
Yeah, we own them.
Do we have loans on equity out there that we're trying to do?
It's not like we have car payments or anything.
Okay.
No, we own the buses outright. The problem with our buses, so if you have a bus that the FTA requires you to run a bus for 12 years.
Oh, really?
And maintain it and operate it. All of our buses are at or near the end of their life.
Yeah.
They have 500,000 miles on them. We have one mechanic. And we have to maintain this fleet of buses. And any vehicle gets older,
sure,
it requires more maintenance.
Yeah.
The parts are harder to find. You have vehicles out of service longer. And so that presents an issue. We have an opportunity to get some new buses. But the problem for us now is can we afford new buses in a time where we're operating constrained? You know, do we spend the money to buy the buses, or do we spend the money to keep operations going? And this opportunity right now is, and this is probably going way too far in the weeds, but we have a chance to buy 4 new buses. They cost $750,000. We only have to pay $100,000, and the rest is funded by the federal government, and we have a grant for that. So the question becomes, do we buy these buses for $25,000 each, or do we keep the $100,000 and forego them because we need the $100,000 for operating? It creates quite a conundrum for us because we're not going to get buses any cheaper, and we're not going to get buses any sooner, and we may not even get them later if that funding source dries up. So we're really in a tough spot right now where we have to decide, can we afford to do this and at the same time cut service back? It really is a challenging time, and it's a challenging situation. And I think that we're going to really have to think long and hard about how we continue to operate here.
Thanks so much. It was a pleasure talking to you.
All right, thank you.
David Carr, Executive Director of the Sunset Empire Transportation District.